If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
We have been wanting to get Dub Bears super fan,
yep,
Dave Swirsky, on the show for, well, how long have we been playing his songs?
Well, he's been doing this for a couple of years. Dave, how are you tonight?
Hello, my friends. I am fantastic. How are you? Burning the midnight oil, eh?
Yes, we are. I'm a little giddy. You'll forgive me. I'm going to be fangirling for a while because I look forward to your songs after the Bears games. You have outdone yourself this season. Has this been a really great season for you, the super fan?
Well, thank you so much for the kind words. Yes, this has been such a magical season, and it's truly for me, it's been such a weird kind of full circle moment because losing Uncle Bob at the beginning of the season was heartbreaking and gut-wrenching, and I didn't even know if this was going to be something that I was going to continue to do this year. And then through the support of so many people that have said kind words like you just did, that I kind of felt like I had to even more than ever before, and I felt his presence throughout this entire season, and I think he's supplying some of that magic from up above for us. So, it's been a pretty magical season, that's for sure.
Well, Dave, even last year when it was less than a wonderful season, we looked forward to your songs.
Yes.
Your songs were the high point of the season last
year. That's right.
Thank you. Yeah, what's so crazy is what I started to realize was that, you know, I was sort of channeling the emotions of the entire fan base as best I could through my words and lyrics in these songs, and more, you know, to commiserate those bad losses the last couple years, and then now to be able to celebrate the exciting times. It's a little bit of pressure, but I like that kind of pressure. It's good.
So is it harder to write a song after an ugly loss? Or what inspires you, the wins or the losses, as a creative?
Yeah, it's so, you know, the losses, the hardest part after a loss is to actually find the motivation to, like, get into the process. Because the process is a beast. It is, it's all-encompassing. As soon as the clock strikes zero, I pretty much go right to work and start trying to find a song, mm-hmm, and then kind of dive into my work. And when it's a loss, I'm pretty bummed out. And it's kind of frustrating sometimes. I'm like, I don't even want to do this. I don't even know what to say. Yeah. You know, like, I don't know how to channel this. So I think for me, the sad ones are harder, but I think judging from the kind of the reaction to things, I think a lot of people love my pain, unfortunately. So, the sad ones really go crazy viral sometimes more than the happy ones.
Yes.
But it's been nice to find some happy stuff to think about this year a little bit more than not.
See, we know that you're crying behind those aviator sunglasses.
Oh my gosh,
we just
sure
know
am.
It, right?
Yep.
And we
yeah,
can
there's
see,
been some real pain.
So sometimes we can see the tears on your stash, too.
Yes.
That's right. They got that stash up a little bit, you know.
When you're looking for a song, do you have a list of songs that you've kind of thought about, okay, if they win, this would be a cool parody. If they lose, this would be a cool parody. Or is it a last-minute bolt of lightning that strikes you?
It's mostly last-minute bolt of lightning that strikes me, but I do have, like, a running list. So I, you know, as I started this thing out, my sensibilities were kind of where I grew up, and the reason that this character was kind of in my peripheral anyway was because I grew up as a massive fan of the true SNL, you know, super fans and SNL in general in that era in the 90s, and that was, like, kind of my breeding ground and learning, training ground, I guess, for comedy and for kind of channeling this spirit of a super fan, which I was from the time I was a little kid. I've just always loved the Bears. And so I started to kind of like do songs that were all kind of 90s based, like, you know, alternative, kind of the stuff that I grew up loving when I was a kid. And so kind of started with, you know, a group of maybe 20, 30 songs that first year. And then that has grown to, I think I'm over, gosh, I have to look it up now. My current list is definitely massive, and I add to it all the time. Let's see where we're at right here. We'll just scroll down to the bottom. We are at 579 songs.
Wow.
Equaling 1.5 days that I have in my, like, research file, which I come up after a game, I hit shuffle, and I just start playing, and if something hits me, I stick with it for a second, and if it doesn't, I move on. After about, you know, 30 seconds of that song, I'll move on to the next one and see if something else hits lyrically. And the cool thing, because football is, you know, you on to the next week, as all the good coaches say. It's kind of like that with me too, is I can't spend too much time overanalyzing any choice of song or of, you know, lyric direction. I just kind of, if it feels right, I dive in.
Go with the moment. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to ask Dave Swirsky to jump into the phone booth, remove his sunglasses and his stash, and he is going to reveal his secret identity as
David Hawk. David.
Hello.
Thank
you.
How are you doing? Thank you for joining us tonight. Every time I go to your page on Facebook and then over to YouTube to see what you've done each week, you just make me laugh. You're having so much fun. And this has really exploded because you've got over 100,000 followers now and literally, am I right, millions of views on your songs?
Yes.
Millions.
Yeah. The following is now up to 250,000 overall across all the platforms. And yeah, like just last season alone, like just last season was over 30 million plays, I think, total of everything. And this season is millions and millions as well. It's really crazy. And I had no idea that it would blow up to what it has now. But it's like, it's you know, magical. Like I said before, like this season, it's been a really magical, cool thing for me to sink my teeth into. So,
well, let me mention, because the blatant plug light is on, and if people would like to check out your website, they should go to davidhawk.com. That's davidhawak.com. And was there a point when you realized, oops, I may have really stumbled onto something here? Was
it
a song or a game, or when did you realize, ooh, I got to hold on to this horse?
Yeah, so what, I mean, now that I'm unmasked, the real way it went down was I had written a pilot. So I've been in Los Angeles for about 20 years. I'm from the Midwest. I grew up in Iowa. And so, you know, we're no NFL team state. Mm-hmm. So you have an adjacent state. And I latched onto the Bears through Tecmo Bowl and, you know, just the Bears being good. And I had a real uncle, my Uncle John, actually, who was a big Bears fan. And I became a Bears fan once I knew what football was and, you know, grew up watching WGN from Iowa and everything. And so I've been out here for 20 years, kind of acting, musician, a lot of voiceover work. And then 3 years ago in that season, I had written a pilot that I wanted to direct and act in. And my wife and I produced it with another production team out here in Los Angeles. And we were going to try to shop it around. And what happened was writer strikes and actor strikes back to back. And so I had this project that we spent a lot of our own money on that we felt really, really good about. We had some really good connections with Netflix, and it was about four kids growing up in the Midwest who basically turned their teacher into a superhero with a magical pen. And so it was like going back to my roots, writing about home. It was really, really exciting. And then we just couldn't do anything with it. So I did a fantasy football draft for the fantasy football league that I run with my wife and some of my friends from home and from here. And I did it in that character. I did it as you know, Bob's nephew. And at the time I had a really bad real mustache. And I did it, you know, just to film that little, I think it was like the draft order or something. And my wife saw it and she was like, you just need to put that on the internet. I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, just do that. And I was like, oh, okay. So the first, you know, 3 years ago, the first couple of weeks, I just did kind of skit based stuff. And then we were going to be 0-3. And I was at the stove making some eggs, and I had No One Knows What It's Like to Be the Sad Man Behind His Stash kind of like just hit my brain. And I was like, oh my God. And so I ran upstairs. I was like, I got to write a song. So I wrote, you know, it was so simple. It was just me on a wall with an acoustic guitar. And, you know, it's No One Knows What It's Like to Be the Sad Man, to Be the Bears Fan Behind His Stash. And that's kind of like that one rocketed to over 1 million plays on TikTok when I didn't have a following.
Yeah.
And that was the aha moment for me. I was like, oh, I'm on to something. Uh-huh. And that's when I went back to George Wendt and I said, hey, just so you know, this thing that I asked you about, like it went over 1 million plays on one thing. So like, I just want to make sure I'm good and I'm not stepping on toes. And he became my biggest supporter for the last 3 years of it, where like every week we were interacting with every post I did. And he was like, you're Chicago's, you know, Weird Al, you're Chicago. Like, and it was such a magical thing to have somebody that I idolized my entire life really embrace it and want me to do more. So pretty crazy.
Let's just clarify though, for people who might be new to this, when you talk about Bob, that's the character of Bob Swirsky from the Superfan skit from Saturday Night Live. So you got the blessing of one of the originals, which is really huge and very cool. And yep. You are like, as Dave Sworsky, you're like the nephew of the two guys, right?
Yeah, I kind of just claimed myself to be the nephew of Bob and adopted the Sworsky name, and he was cool with it, and he told me Robert Smigel was cool with it, and I just kind of run with it, and now I call Robert my other uncle, you know, so Carl Walarski, he's just, you know, an uncle kind of removed, but he's still an uncle. So.
by the way, you mentioned the movie that you had worked on with your wife. I saw part of that from the clip that you have on your website. Oh, boy, I want to see that whole movie.
Thank you so much.
Part of that is that I'm a comic book geek, mm-hmm. but the other part is that it looks so good. I want to see where this all goes.
Thank you so much. Yeah, there's this thing out here called the Blacklist, which is where you can kind of, as a writer, put your scripts out, and they get analyzed by industry professionals, and we had so much great feedback on that. We were riding high. It was my wife and I, and then we had two other producers out here, good friends of ours, that had some really great connections out here too, and we really felt great about it. And then it was just, you know, you know what happened. I mean, the entertainment industry over the last 3 years has just been in such a weird place that now to flex out of that more into this content creation and realize the runway I have with it and the creative freedom that it gives me. But like, literally, Dave Sworsky is me, just like kind of on like steroids of fandom, because like that is me. I've loved the Bears forever, and I didn't really know how to channel it. And now finding music with writing, with acting, with editing, and all the things I love to do, because I edited that entire pilot shoot too, and I scored it, and I did like all of that. So all of those skill sets that I've been building out here, kind of as a jack of all trades, just all funneling so beautifully to this. You know, so
Let me take you back to the beginning of your involvement in this industry. What was it? What made it you want to get into this industry?
You left Iowa and ended up in LA. I mean, what pulled you there?
I knew growing up in the Midwest that was, I almost moved to Chicago at one point, cause I went to college, believe it or not, on an opera scholarship, to go be an opera performance major, and I hated it. So the first semester I did it, I was trying to also perform in coffee houses with my acoustic guitar, and my voice professors were like, don't do that. You're going to hurt your voice. And it was like, come on, man. Like I know how to sing. and so it really kind of turned me off from the jump. And then I flexed out of that to do like jazz percussion. And then I quit college after a year to go explore being a singer songwriter. I moved to Minnesota for a second, and I moved back to Iowa, and then I almost moved to Chicago. And then I did a scouting event kind of on a whim, like as a joke. I was riding around with my bandmate, Colin. He was my bass player for my touring band that I was in at the time. And he and I were like listening to the radio, and it was like, have you ever wanted to be a model or an actor? And like, come to this scouting event. And he was like, you're going to that. And I was like, no, I'm not. And he ended up going and doing it with me. And then I got like, fast forward, I basically got a lot of attention at this event. They invited me to another event that I got even more attention at. And I met managers and agents that were like, you should be in Los Angeles. Like, what are you doing? So I was at the University of Iowa at the time as a theater and history major, because I kept switching. I couldn't decide what I wanted to do other than be on stage. And then I was just like, I'm gonna go see what happens. So I came out here, and one of my first big things I did was Hannah Montana. Mm-hmm. I was her guitar player for a bit, and then I toured with Billy Ray Cyrus for a little while, and that was kind of like my intro into this world. And my first television credit was Hannah Montana, and then I've been kind of just doing whatever I needed to do to survive since. So
how cool. But now you've given me an idea. At some point, Dave Sworsky should do a kind of an opera, The Fat Lady Sings, after some game.
Opera man from SNL is one of my favorite things that he used to do on like, I'm a giant Sandler fan, which is why this is so cool to be adjacent with Smigel, because he's such a good, you know, friend of Sandler's, and Sandler is like, to me, like on a pedestal like no one else. So opera man is, I thought about doing something very similar to that after some of these games, so we'll see what happens. You never know. Know.
So you are channeling not only Sandler, but of course Weird Al. I mean, yeah. When you think of great comedy parody songs, you think of both of them, and you're right up there. All right, sit tight, Dave. We're going to take a break. Come
sit
back.
Sit tight or hang loose, whichever works.
I think I'm going to go with the latter.
We're going to talk some more with David Hawk, and the listener said, please spell his name slower for us. So it's H-A-A-C-K.
Two A's, no waiting.
That's right. You can check him out on YouTube, and you can check out Superfan. Just all you have to do is Google the Bears Superfan. And it will all pop up for you.
Everybody stay safe getting home. Have a good night.
Don't. Really?
I'm sorry, okay?
Just get it back.
Can I get my notebook back, please, Miss Jerry?
Yeah, the distraction that you're focusing on instead of paying attention to my class.
Yep, that's the one.
Did you draw this?
I wish Nikki did.
You're close to failing my class, Chris.
I'll do better. Yeah, I promise.
I need you to.
I know that you're going through a lot right now, but I just...
Look, you know, if you don't bring your grade up, your mom is going to come in here and parent teacher conferences, and she's going to yell at me so much. And we both know that's not fun for anybody.
Okay.
All right, go. Get out of here.
That is just a little bit from a movie that I want to see all of. It's called The Comic Book Club. And our guest, David Hawk, the alter ego of Dave Swirsky, is nice enough to hang out with us. I really, really want to see the rest of that movie, David.
Oh, that's amazing.
What's the future of it?
I don't know. So, I mean, we have it with a couple different people. What's crazy is, so the very first pilot I did when I got into Los Angeles, it was with Sean Hattisey, who's now in The Pit, and some other, you know, pretty big name people. Leslie Hope was my mom in it, and she played Jack Bauer's wife in 24. So she had a ton of credits, too. She kind of became my mentor as a director out here, because she's now directing some really major television and film stuff. And she kind of signed on to actually be sort of a shepherd of this project for me too, to be able to direct a pilot if people didn't believe that I could, because I hadn't really done it yet. So like we have some heat behind it. It's just a matter of, you know, this town is just crazy, and ever since the strikes, they really stopped their spending spree that they had been doing prior to that on so much content, and now it's a little bit more focused. And you know, it's just been such a weird time out here to really like navigate that. And in my time of living here, I've now had multiple actor strikes to navigate, multiple writer strikes. This one was the most brutal, and it all kind of like happened at once. And it's really just kind of, it just made shopping things for people that were less known names, I think, just a little bit more tricky.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to share, if you don't mind, I want to share just a little smidge of the concept of this. Because it has to do with, as from what little I saw of it, it has to do with one of the kids has access to one of the pencils that had originally been used by one of the two original creators of Superman.
Yep.
And this kind of leads to all kinds of magical and super stuff. It's wonderful. And if anybody is listening and has tons of money and wants to throw it David's way, they should do it.
Please. Yes, let's do that. I'm down for that. We would be thrilled to make this thing. And we know we can. That's the thing, too, is like I can see it. We, you know, the writing process, too, with this to pitch, you sort of have to have at least 3 to 4 seasons worth. And I wrote an entire series Bible that kind of explains where the story would go through 3 seasons of it. And so it's all there ready to go. It's just a matter of finding the right eyeballs on it and the right willingness to say, let's give this a shot.
Well, I may have to,
ending, you know,
I may have to buy that lottery ticket after all.
There you go.
Okay. So as Dave Swirsky and David Hawk, your world has changed. I would say you started the Superfan 3 years ago.
Yep.
Technology has just kind of spun so quickly forward in the past 3 years. How has that affected you as a creative? The things that you can do in your own home.
Yeah. I mean, that's so the best juxtaposition of that is what we're talking about, like that, the pilot concept that we shot, because we, you know, we couldn't do an entire pilot, so we shot basically like an 8-minute short film version of it to do like a pitch concept. And that alone is, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to try to do in a legitimate way, you know, renting space
right.
and getting permits and paying, you know, all of the crew and all the things that we wanted to do right. My wife is a makeup artist and hairstylist out here who has tons of on-set experience, so she's a fantastic producer as well. She just hasn't gotten a chance to do that as much, and so we kind of set this up, and you know, it's a massive undertaking even as a small thing that we were doing. And then when you fast forward to like content creation, it's me with mostly I shoot everything on an iPhone.
Wow.
And
you're
luckily
kidding.
I am no everything I do is Swirsky is an iPhone. I'm just I've been an Apple person kind of forever and kind of a technological nerd in the in hopefully a good kind of way. And I keep up with it all. And I'm, you know, I'm a pretty fast editor at this point. But to be able to do that much stuff in a small space. And the best part about the content creation stuff is that you're not really sort of like they don't count off for spelling, I feel like, as an audience as much. Like people kind of like it feeling intimate and sort of like it's coming from your room rather than like, oh, this person has tons of money. Like, no wonder it looks good. It's like it's the opposite. So getting used to that and sort of tapping into that has been so freeing for me in a different kind of way because and now that I've been doing some brand deals and you know, ad concepts where I'm getting to write original jingles and an original concept from start to finish and then bring it to fruition myself, you know, as a writer, producer, director, editor, all elements, and then hand it to a brand and then let them do what they will with it. It's opened my eyes to the possibilities of, I mean, the landscape of, you know, a creative has changed drastically. And if you can leverage social media in a way that is authentic, organic, and you like what you're doing and can be consistent at it, there's almost more runway there to have a pretty incredible career doing this too. I think the big thing for me and you guys unmasking me tonight is part of it for me is that like, I love how much Dave Swirsky is a living, breathing person to most anybody who watches. And that's how I want it to be. Cause when I'm out in public as Dave, no matter where I am, I'm recognized in California. I'm recognized in Chicago. I'm recognized kind of everywhere. And I think that positivity and the hopefulness and like the apoliticalness and like all of that is such a draw to that character. And I love that character, but I also have a lot of other, you know, things that I'm still working on in my creative world too, that I'm trying to marry the two. And I think that's like now for me, a little bit of, it's not hard because with the football season, I don't really have time to do all the other things other than in the background in my own way. But Swirsky has really taken over most of my time.
Yeah.
But then in the off season, it's kind of trying to navigate, you know, how do you bridge the gap between who David is and who Dave is and bring those two together. So I'll be working on that more as the years go on, I think.
So Dave Swirsky, when we see your videos, you're in a really cool bear's man cave.
Yeah.
So that did that change over the years as you realized, oh, you know what? This has really become a thing and people are looking forward to Dave's take on whatever the Bears have done the previous Saturday or Sunday. So is that in your house?
Yeah, that's my studio, our office in our home here in Los Angeles. It's where I do all my work. And then the projector screen you see behind me is actually a full projector that I can pull down and then watch, you know, movies and things in here as well. So it's a fully functioning studio/entertainment room.
Nice.
I have now turned into my Bears set. So we have a lighting set here where I can tell my smart lights to go Bears set and it does all my lights for me. And yeah, it's turned into its own little studio. My friends actually came and visited in October, and they're like, oh, my God, it feels like I'm walking into a set. And I'm like, it is.
It is.
It's kind of crazy. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's the Bears superfan set.
Johnny and I were talking off the air, and Chuck Swirsky has been a longtime friend of ours. Have you ever met or talked with Chuck Swirsky?
I never have. Our paths kind of crossed on Twitter towards the beginning. I don't really do anything on Twitter anymore. I found Twitter was the one that I allowed myself to go away from. I felt like it got the most toxic of any place that I was putting things out. And I was like,
agreed.
I don't need to waste my energy here. I'm going to go to the other places where people seem kind of positive. But in the beginning, I saw some things with him being like, no relation, but I love his stuff kind of a thing. But I have never met him. I would love to at some point. So,
because again, for the people who weren't around, and we at the top of the show, we were talking about where we were 40 years ago when the Bears won the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
And some amongst us weren't even born, weren't even.
I was a tree.
Yeah, hush. But Chuck Swirsky was the inspiration for the characters on Superfan.
Yeah.
And we worked with Chuck here at WGN Radio 40 years ago when the station was carrying the Bears and we carried the Super Bowl and all that other good stuff. There is a slight difference in spelling of the name. But anybody who listened to this radio station or knows Chuck from the Bulls coverage that he does, they know that he would froth at the mouth when he was doing sports, you know? So this is the super fan. And that's where Smigel grabbed the idea and ran with it on Saturday Night Live, which is just wonderful that it still lives on.
So And that I do feel a responsibility with that, and I feel like it kind of came from George, where he was just so tickled at what I was doing, and and now I've had so many people in with his loss that were like, you're carrying the torch and that kind of a thing.
That's
and then
great.
Just this week, Robert reached out and wanted to do a song together that he had come up with, so I got to work with him again creatively, which is like such a pinch me thing for me,
because
again, being such a fan of SNL growing up, like he was the writer of so many of the things that I grew up idolizing. So now to be able to kind of play in the same sandbox with him and know that I had George's support before he left us and all of that, it does feel like I'm carrying on, but not doing an impersonation of it, like doing a new interpretation for a new generation, which is kind of where I've, you know, for a while it was imposter syndrome, and now I feel very, very good, you know, in what I'm trying to do and the response I'm getting. It's been incredible.
Yeah.
By the way, if you want to see the video that Dave was just talking about, you can go to youtube.com/Dave Swirsky and you will find tons and tons of videos, including the new one that he was just talking about.
And again, the spelling is slightly different. So the last name is S-W-E-R, but we're going to have all of that up on our Facebook page and our blog so people can click to it and find out more about you.
By the way, can we do a quick quick blatant plug for your wife? Because I saw your wife's YouTube page and I sent a link to Johnny. She has a terrific YouTube page talking about makeup and stuff.
Yeah, we were playing around with that. We've kind of fallen off. She's so busy. She has quite the career out here as well, just kind of jumping between projects and projects. But my wife is Allie Elizabeth, and A-L-L-I Elizabeth M-U-A is usually the makeup artist. And her YouTube, you could find it from mine as well, like, because I was editing and directing her YouTube videos when we were trying to do that, because we were doing some tutorials and things. So she's incredibly talented, and she's the reason that I got the push off the cliff to give this a shot. So if anybody likes what I'm doing, it's due to my awesome wife. So
well, thanks, Allie. Well, thank you for joining us tonight too, because I'm not kidding. When I reached out to you, I was tickled when you responded to my email, because every week I would run into the office and I'd say, Steve, Dave Swirsky's got a new song up. We got to work it into our Sports Between the Sheets segment that we do in the 1 o'clock hour on the radio when we talk about the Bears and what their hopes are. And this is a big one this weekend. Where are you going to watch the game? It's easier since they are playing L.A.
In fact, since you're out in L.A., who are you rooting for this week?
Oh my gosh, there's no question here.
Like,
Bears. I'm super excited to watch it from the couch. Like, when I am visiting, so I came to the Pittsburgh game in Chicago this year, and I would die to go to one of these playoff games, even though it's cold. Like, I want to experience that, but the tickets were crazy.
Yeah.
And not to mention the travel with it, but the studying that I kind of do and the focus that I have to sort of really be able to get the nuance of a song, of like, you know, some of the little things that happen or like one of those little moments that I can write about, it is helpful to have the real national broadcast where I can sort of focus on it. But we're having some friends come over who have been Lucky Charms. They went to They went to the Eagles and Bears game on Black Friday at this amazing place in Los Angeles called Cosm with me, and we won that one. Then they came over for Green Bay round two, and we won that one. And then they came over for Green Bay round three, and we won that one. So hopefully my friends John and Joe will be the lucky charms with Allie and I here to watch it, and then I will kick them out so I can do my work when we're done winning, after we win.
Oh, real quick, before we wrap up, I have to ask you, with all the parodies you've done, have you ever heard from anybody whose song you have parodied?
No. So the closest was, so what's crazy is the way that this season started, my Pope parody of it was High, High Hopes by Panic at the Disco. So
right.
Shy Town, Pope, Bears are winning. That one, ESPN actually reached out to me prior to the season starting because we started on Monday Night Football this year. And they wanted to use that parody in a piece that they were doing about the Pope and about everything else. So it was Michelle Buck, her piece on the Bears, they used my parody in there. And so they had to contact Panic at the Disco and get the go-ahead for that for it to all work out. So that's the closest that I've gotten to one of the artists actually being like, yeah, I like what he's doing. That's cool.
Very so, neat. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good way to start the year.
Again, it has been so much fun talking to you. I hope you will use us. And if you have our numbers, if you have any new projects coming up, please let us know. We'd love to talk to you again. And if you're ever back in Chicago, we'd love to get you in the studio.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll make it happen. I will be back. I come back and forth quite a bit, and I'm sure this off season, I'm hoping maybe for the draft and or training camp and more than that. And I would love to come in and meet you guys in person. So really appreciate you having me on.
Well, before we say goodnight, can we hear Dave just give a shout out to the Bears?
Absolutely. Okay, boys, we got a lot to do, and we got to show those bums from Los Angeles what this cold weather's like. For the Bears, it means nothing. It's bear weather, my friends. We're going to win this thing. We're going to do the NFC Championship up in Seattle, and we're going to win a Super Bowl for George, for Peyton, for everybody else. Go Bears!
Amen. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
Take care.
You too.
Oh, that was, what a cool guy.
He is so, so interesting.
And so creative. Yeah. Really, look up, we'll put links to all of his YouTube pages and websites. What a creative, cool guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So again, last name is H-A-A-C-K, Hawk.
Two A's, no waiting.
And if you just want to check out Superfan, Dub Bears, D-A Bears, Superfan, it would probably, if you just put that in, it would take you back to the Saturday Night Live bit, which started this whole thing 100 years ago with George Wendt and Joe Mantegna. And now you bring it up to date, and Dave Swirsky, S-W-E-R-S-K-I.
We wanted to suggest to you to think some good thoughts for Lisa Dent. She is dealing with some horrible stuff right now. You can find out about more. Go to WGNradio.com. Under health, look up Lisa Dent, One Day at a Time.
Right.
She's dealing with some awful stuff.
Send her some healing thoughts and vibes and prayers. She took a horrible fall a week ago. And I was rolling our suitcase in tonight for the show, and it made me think of what happened to her. Her suitcase was lying down where she'd been packing it, and the handle had been extended. And when she turned around, she stumbled over that handle and fell to the ground, breaking her arm and her shoulder, had a complete shoulder replacement.
Think about that. A complete shoulder replacement.
And she writes about what her last week has been like, and it's been pretty hellish. She's in good hands. She was taken care of at Northwestern. It's just, as she said the first time she announced why she wasn't at work, little things like that can change your life profoundly.
And as we said on our Facebook page, Lisa really is one of the good ones. So any good vibe. And as she disclosed, you know, the dancing farmer, he's not in the best of health right now, so he couldn't do anything to help her. Her sister has been taking care of her.
Her sister drove 4 hours to get her from the farm and to bring her here, so she's now staying with her sister. And as she said, everybody should have a wonderful sister like I have. Yeah. Amen to that, because this has been just a horrible, horrible couple of weeks for her.
You can either go to our Facebook page and scroll down. You'll see we put up some links to the updates, or go to WGNRadio.com and just look up Lisa Dent, One Day at a Time. And I mean, the kind of thing, it shouldn't happen to anybody, but thank goodness she's been getting the really right kind of medical care.
Yeah. Yeah, and she it says in her most recent post, the name of what she, the procedure that she had is the humerus neck proximal open reduction internal fixation. You know what? I had a pain in my shoulder when I read that.
Yeah.
I was like, ouch. Yeah, filling in for her next week will be John and Wendy.
Yeah.
They'll be back and forth covering for her. And I guess it's from week to week to find out, you know, what she's going to be up to doing.
And Lisa, if by any chance you happen to be listening, I can just say I've never had the experience you've been through. But from what I dealt with my hip surgery, a good physical therapist is your best friend.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Oh, boy.
But I think we had a bit of a flashback when we first heard about her accident.
Oh, yeah.
Because there were some similarities in that we were in London when you were thrown from a bus and you broke your hip. And, okay, how do you get to the doctor that's going to fix this for you?
But at its worst, I was able to be on crutches. I didn't have to have my hip replaced. She has had to have her whole shoulder replaced.
Yes. Oof. Well, again, please send her some good thoughts. And there are many places online where you could reach out to her, even on our page, because she has indicated we've seen her there. Yeah. She's responded. She's reading all of this. She's got time now. So,
And again, I can't overemphasize, Lisa is one of the good ones.
Yeah.
So
she's a sweetie.
Any good vibes you can send her way, please do that. Patrick, I know that isn't the introduction that you thought you would get, but, you work at a hospital that deals with a whole lot of medical stuff, so you have a concept of what we're just talking about.
We do. The people come to Keck or to LAC, USC, now LA General, are usually having the worst day of their lives.
Yeah.
And we're very fortunate that we have some of the best doctors and nurses and just staff there to help in situations like this. And Lisa, get better. We miss you.
And Patrick, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that too. We take for granted the fact that we have our doctors here. She lives on a farm. And the ambulance took her to a hospital. They had no doctor that could take care of her there. And we take that for granted because, you know, I got to go to another suburb to my doctor. Well, she had to go 4 hours.
Yeah.
Big difference. Well, thank you for joining us. You've had a big day today at Disneyland, huh?
I did. Because it was so cold today in California, it was 84 degrees.
Oh, 84 degrees.
But with the wind chill, it felt like 83.
And you guys were in shorts and shirt sleeves, and it looked so weird as we were layering.
It was very weird.
Yes. Well, we've got so much to talk about with you.
There was this little Verizon thing that happened this past week, Patrick. What was that all about?
Yeah, basically for about 10 hours on Wednesday, there were about 2 million Verizon customers who lost access to Verizon cellular network. What that meant is you couldn't send or receive any calls at all. Your phones were stuck in SOS mode. Your phone was going, I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And emergency, you couldn't send text messaging. For those of us who use navigation, there was no mobile data, so there was no navigation. People couldn't figure out how to drive around and get from point A to point B. It was really kind of like going back to 1990 when there was no smartphone and no internet.
Let me interject, though. It was actually kind of scary because the SOS is what freaked out friends of mine that live on the East Coast. They're like, I don't know. I'm really concerned. Of all the messages to pop up, SOS kind of makes you think there's an emergency going on.
And it didn't impact us in this area.
No.
But on the East Coast, boy, did it ever.
And there kind of pockets around the country got hit on this. And when your phone goes into SOS mode, what that means is it can't send or receive signals, but it can maybe try to contact 911. So the idea is it's going to have some sort of fallback so that you can contact emergency services. Some people tried to do that, which actually then caused problems with the emergency services. And if you won't have your phone, you could try to do cellular connection, or sorry, satellite connection, where you would point your phone to the sky and try to use Starlink to be able to send and receive messages that way. But this was not a hack. This is basically Verizon looked and said it was a software issue. We don't know what that means. But for 10 hours, you lost access. What Verizon's going to do is, if you were one of the 2 million people who lost access on Wednesday, Verizon's going to give you a $20 bill credit. However, they're going to make you jump through some hoops. It's not going to show up automatically on your bill. You actually are going to get a text message from Verizon when their credit is going to be available to you. And then you have to go into the My Verizon app and manually claim the credit. If you don't manually claim the credit, then you don't get $20 back. But again, you have to wait for the text message to come to you. You can't do it right now.
Okay, explain this to me. If they know that you were one of the people who was impacted by this because they are sending you the text message, why don't they just say, we know you were one of the people who was impacted, so here's the credit?
Because off the record, they probably don't want to pay everybody. And by not making it where it's automatic, where you have to go and say, yes, I want my $20 back, they can save themselves some money instead of, I mean, $20 times 2 million people is a lot of money. And you have a couple hundred thousand who just don't actually click on the text message. Well, you get to keep that $20.
Okay, I'm raising the there is no such thing as a dumb computer question flag. During this outage, could you use your own Wi-Fi if you had your phone connected to that Wi-Fi rather than using Verizon's data?
Absolutely. Yes, you could. In fact, that's what you need to do. If you ever find yourself in a situation where you're on AT&T or T-Mobile or Verizon, and for some reason or other, the network's dead, you can still connect to Wi-Fi. And as long as you've enabled Wi-Fi calling, you'll still be able to send and receive telephone calls. You will still be able to have the internet and text messaging, and you can download offline maps to use it. But you do need to connect to Wi-Fi if the cellular network is down.
If you connect to Wi-Fi automatically, like as we do when we walk into our house, it goes from data to house. Is it possible you could have been in an area where everybody was being impacted, but because you automatically connected to your Wi-Fi, you wouldn't have known about it?
Yes. Yep.
I'm still.
By the way, go ahead.
I just want to say I'm still a little concerned by the fact that they're not telling us. I'm pleased that it wasn't a hacker. I'm pleased that they're upfront about that, and I tend to believe that's the case. But what happened? I mean, this was pretty devastating to the folks who were without their service.
And what kind of a software glitch would it have been to impact only certain areas rather than the whole network?
All of their customers,
Chances are they did something on the underlying root network for Verizon that for some reason or another kicked off a whole bunch of changes across the entire network at the exact same time, and it got propagated across the entire country, and unfortunately it impacted 2 million people. Fortunately, it didn't impact everybody, so not all devices were connected, and we're not quite sure. We're waiting for the postmortem to figure out what was it that caused some people to stay connected and other people not. But it really was just very likely they pushed out an update that they had not quality assured, and it took down the network accidentally. And then it took them forever to figure out, okay, why did this software update taped out of the network. How do we fix that? What's the undo? And
And who was the guy that got fired for hitting that button? You know, there's one guy they're going, it's Jim. Blame Jim. It's He did it.
So bottom line, in the future, should that ever happen, connect to your Wi-Fi network as quick as possible.
Now, connect your Wi-Fi network. Now, just be careful. There might be a chance that you won't be able to receive telephone calls, but you can still make outgoing telephone calls if you're using Wi-Fi calling. It really depends on how bad this software glitch is on the network. Mm-hmm. If for some reason or another, this is not just taking down the cellular network, but taking down the calling version of the network, you could lose the ability to receive telephone calls on wireless, but you'll still be able to make outgoing calls.
Okay. Well, just one of the many things that we have dealt with technologically in the past week. The other one we wanted to spend a few minutes and talk about is, especially with cold weather, we're all looking at our electricity bills and saying our electric bill just goes up, up, and up. There have been some stories. In fact, front page of the Chicago Tribune just recently was all about AI centers responsible for draining our electric capacity, and we, the people that are using it on a day-to-day basis, end up paying for it.
And before we get into some of the specifics, can we drill down to the basics? What is it that artificial intelligence is doing that has an impact on our electric grid?
The answer is that these data centers basically have thousands and thousands of servers, big computers, and they're running those servers around the clock, and the servers themselves require just a profound amount of energy, not just for the compute, but also for cooling. So you've got these giant warehouses of servers screaming along, generating heat, and eating up all the electricity. And what ends up happening is that you are having more demand than there is supply of electricity. Utility companies like ComEd just can't create new plants fast enough. And because the demand is going up so quickly, the grid operators, ComEdison, for example, or PAC, the Nextel, the Northeast one, they have to secure additional generation and then additional transmission, additional reserve capacity, and that is not cheap. It's very, very expensive. And most of that cost is being paid by everybody, not the people who are using all the electricity. So it's being charged to all ratepayers, not just the companies like Microsoft or Google or Amazon or OpenAI that are driving up demand. So what you saw in Illinois this year is that electricity prices jumped incredibly. And there's a whole bunch of stuff going on where it's like, wait a minute, what's going on? This isn't fair to our end users, to the customers, to everybody at home. Why should we have to pay for this? And that's really the policy debate that's going on around the country, from the local area to the national level. Should households and small businesses be forced to subsidize Microsoft and Google, Amazon and OpenAI, these trillion-dollar tech companies? The utilities are arguing that the data centers are actually bringing jobs and tax revenue, so therefore it's okay and whatever. The critics are saying, okay, that's fine, but that's not – you're gouging the customers. It doesn't make any sense. So what you're starting to see are states exploring new data rate classes, and maybe offering some sort of special infrastructure fees, or maybe even requirements that if you're going to set up a large data center, you've got to have your own power generators. Mm-hmm. You can't plug into the network. You've got to go and get something else that's available. You know, build it yourself.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
I am once again raising the there's no such thing as a dumb computer question flag. Okay. With the technology around today, isn't it possible to say Johnny was using some of this AI technology, therefore she should pay part of this bill? Julian was not, so he's not going to have to pay this. Or is it as simple or as complex as AI is embedded into your computer, therefore you need to
tax everybody.
Yeah.
Make everybody pay for it.
The electric company doesn't know what's connected to their network. In other words, you can plug in a refrigerator, you can plug in an air conditioner, you can plug in Bitcoin farm. It has no idea. It just basically knows that you're eating up the electricity. So there's no way to say, okay, you're using AI a lot, therefore we're going to charge you for it. The only way you would know it is if you were creating a data center, in which case then you would need to have special connections to the network to be able to, you know, get the electricity you need, at which point they're going to know, oh, you're a data center. And yeah, the big thing that we need to remember, and I kind of made this point in the show notes, is that when we designed our electrical grid, it wasn't designed for always on devices. The reality, if you think about it, you know, we are at home 8 hours a day, and the rest of the days we turn off all of our electricity, or, you know, we're not using, you know, a whole bunch of stuff. When we're at work, we might be there for 8 hours or 16 hours if you're doing two shifts. Very rarely do you find businesses doing three shifts anymore. So the grid was never designed for an AI data center, which is, I'm going to turn it on January 1st and I'm going to turn it off never. And it's going to be on forever, eating all the electricity we can get. And that's a big issue. We just didn't build the grid for this. And the demand is outstripping the supply.
Okay. That helped my pea-sized brain understand this. If the grid wasn't designed for always on devices, what were they expecting refrigerators would do when you went to work?
Refrigerators don't run all the time. They're not running 24 hours a day. You know, in other words, your refrigerator runs while it's cooling and then turns it off.
Okay.
Yeah.
A server is always on eating electricity.
Well, I have to ask you the question. A listener, George, who listens every Saturday night from Augusta, Georgia, writes, they're planning five new data centers right here around Augusta, Georgia. And he says, why do we need them? And why so many?
The answer is the demand for AI is being embedded into everything you can possibly imagine. And you have to have servers to be able to run it. And if you can find places in rural areas that have lots and lots of land, you can then connect to the electrical grid out there and build up a data center really, really cheap. It's just a big warehouse with, you know, lots of cooling and lots of electricity and a little bit of water. And you're ready to go. So you're going to start seeing, as more and more companies and organizations are saying, okay, but how are we going to embed AI into this? Or how are we going to embed AI to that? You have to have servers to run it on.
So, is the U.S. being impacted disproportionately to other countries, or the same, or what do we know?
No,
we want to be the leader, though, right, Patrick?
We very much want to be the leader on this one.
But I mean, in terms of charging, do European countries have the same kind of financial problems as we do with this?
Yeah, I think this is just happening so quickly that the regulators haven't caught up yet. I think what we're going to see in the next year, I think 2016 is going to be the year when we realize, okay, there is a free rider problem here and we're going to have to deal with this. And I think you're going to start seeing, wait a minute, you've got, you know, a market capitalization of, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars. You know what? You need to pay a little more for your electricity than somebody who's sitting there in East Avoca, Alabama, who is just basically, you know, running their air conditioner all day.
Right, right. So when you hear that your neighbors are going to the council meetings because they're upset because there's a data center that's going to be built in your community, they're not going because they're anti-technology. They're not going because they're Luddites. They're going because they don't want to pay for the trillion-dollar companies to be able to use the electricity that the system is not built for.
They're going to take too much electricity, and remember, it's supply and demand. If the demand exceeds supply, price goes up.
Right.
And that there is a finite amount of electricity that we're making in America right now. If the demand for this goes up, and it's going up with the data centers, the price has to come up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Has to come up.
By the way, if you're glazing over at some of this, don't worry about writing it down. It will be in our technology notes that will show up on our blog in about the next 2 days or so.
Can I ask that we jump ahead in our notes? Because you put together the best notes. I mean, you are, in fact, a teacher at heart. Steve, right after Christmas, got all gung-ho about pass keys. And
yes.
In fact, he was talking with his brother last week about passkeys, and his brother was like, really, Steve? I don't think I need to go there. And I'm in the other room going, yeah, I agree with you. We got to get with the times, right, Patrick?
We've been talking about this for a long time.
For a couple
We started talking about this in January 2023. And what happens is when you try to get into a website, the website needs to figure out, okay, are you who you say you are? So websites kind of had this assumption that everyone who was authorized to access the website had to have a password. So you had a password, and if you knew the password, you were you. The thing is, you and I, and we've talked about hacks all the time, it's just no longer secure. Passwords don't work anymore. Smart websites are assuming that just because somebody knows an account's username and password doesn't mean that that's actually the person who's supposed to be getting into the website,
right?
Because so many of these username and passwords have been hacked. So, and you know, think about it. We've all written down passwords, and can you guarantee that somebody hasn't seen what you've written down? And the other thing is, and we talk about don't do this, but everyone does. How many times have you used the same password on multiple websites?
Sure.
A lot of us do. You shouldn't. But the reality is, once that one website gets hacked and their password file gets exposed, what that means is hackers then take that password that works on one site and try it on all the different websites, hoping to say, hey, wait a minute, this person might have been lazy and might have used this password someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
So they end up breaking in that. And the other thing is, I mean, how many times have you shared your password with other people? I mean, Netflix. How many times have you given someone your Netflix login? So we're getting to situations where username passwords, it's just not secure for you, and it's not secure for the websites. But the website still needs to know, okay, how do I guarantee that the person who's trying to log into me is actually the person who's supposed to be getting into me and not somebody who's taken somebody's username and passwords? Well, one of the ways to do it is through a passkey. Instead of having a password, there's really no username, there's no password. Instead, each time and a place that you try to go log into has this cryptographic key that's stored on your device. It could be your laptop, your phone, your Android phone, it could be iPhone or whatever. And when you try to go and connect to that particular website, it then opens up that key. And each website has a unique key, and it's tied to that particular website. So your Google passkey only works on Google.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be. So even if it gets broken, and it can't be, you can't go and log into someplace else. Your Amazon passkey only works on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot trick somebody into giving you their passkey. I create a Google website, and it's g00gle.com, and you think it's Google, and I'm asking you for your username and password. But if you have passkeys turned on, the passkey won't work, because passkeys can't be tricked into working on fake websites. And that alone is one of the best ways to take advantage of protecting you from phishing attacks. So when we started talking about this back in January 2023, passkeys were like, okay, this is coming. It's here. It's just everyone's doing it now. And in fact, a lot of really big sites are now requiring passkeys.
Yeah.
Google is saying, if you sign up with a new account, you are required to use a passkey. You can't even use a password. And if you're an existing Google user, Google's really kind of aggressively saying, you know, that password you have, it's not working. It's kind of scary. You need to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And Google's kind of getting you to the point where they're going to try to bypass passwords entirely. If there's a passkey on your device, Apple is doing this, Microsoft, Amazon. I do want to talk about, there is a negative side to passkeys. And this is something I don't see a lot of people talking about this. Your passkey is stored on your device. What happens if you lose that device? Mm-hmm. How do you get into the website? Because remember, you have to have that device with the key that that's stored on the device.
So you lose your phone.
That device is gone.
Yeah.
So most passkeys offer a recovery key that you can print out or save or whatever. Now, when you hear recovery key, you think of it as like a slip of paper that you can unlock and get into the account. That's not what it is. It's not a password. It doesn't let somebody log into day-to-day applications and do things. What it does is it's kind of a spare house key that you keep in a safe place, and it's not the one that's on your keychain. So if you lose your keychain, you still get in. You don't use it unless you're locked out. If for some reason or other you lose your device, you pull out this paper that has this sort of recovery key stored on it. And the nice thing about it is you can then get back your device. So my recommendation is you should be getting rid of passwords and going to pass keys as much as you can.
Let me pause you here for a second.
Yep.
Just for pass keys and Google Authenticator, same thing. Different what?
Different thing. Google Authenticator is two-factor authentication. Google Pass Key is a separate thing where it's going to store a cryptographic key on your computer. So it is Google Authenticator on steroids, much more secure than even that. So what you do is, my recommendation is set up pass keys wherever you can, but then set it up on multiple devices. The idea is that you will have a passkey on not just your phone, but your laptop and maybe your other phone or your other laptop, your other computer. So for some reason or other, you've got all your passkeys stored on your phone. Okay, well, I've got it on my computer as well. So you try to log in on multiple devices using a passkey. You set up a new passkey on each of your devices. And then if you lose a device, you're going to be okay. You can just go set up a new device and do it. So pass keys, they're everywhere, more secure. Just remember, if you lose access to the device that has a pass key on it, you could be in trouble if you don't have some sort of backup plan. Mm-hmm. So the backup plan is log in on multiple devices.
Okay. File this under partly personal. And I don't think my brother Lee would mind me using him as an example. And I don't know if you have an answer to this. If not, I would ask if you could do a little bit of research. One of the problems my brother Lee has with any of this stuff, he's starting to deal with some vision problems. Is there any option for people who are dealing with vision problems to use this kind of technology where they don't have to try to squint at their phone, at their laptop? Is there any audio alternative to this kind of things for people who have vision problems?
There are some options. And actually, this is the nice thing about passkeys is it's much easier for people with low vision because you don't have to know your username and password. It's just basically you click on a little button on your laptop you click on your phone and you log in.
So you're not going to get a string of letters and numbers and
things. Well, you have to know QJ97RFE, right. RF, pound sign. It's just basically Oh, you have your device. Congratulations. Welcome.
You're ready to go. Wow. Passkeys have opened up a Pandora's box, Patrick. And I'd like to suggest that in 2 weeks when you're back with us, we spend some more time talking about this because it is so very, very important. And just a couple of basic questions. People say, well, where do I get a passkey? How do I do this? I believe what you're telling me. I'm ready to make that jump and get rid of my passwords. Where do I go? How do I set this up?
The easiest way to do it is just Google whatever the system or service you want to log into and passkey. So search Amazon space passkey or Apple space passkey or Google space passkey or Netflix space passkey. And it will literally talk you through the process. It's actually really simple. It's just basically using your operating system and your web browser to create a new key for you, and it's a much better way for you to log in to the really secure websites that you just don't want your passwords to be getting out of.
But again, if you have Johnny has a phone, I have a phone, we have a desktop computer, we have laptop computers. Do we need, if we're going to log into Amazon, a different passkey for all of those devices, even though it's still our account that we're logging into?
Yes, you're going to log in the first time. It's going to ask you for your username and password and say, do you want me to create a passkey for you? You do want to have a passkey on as many devices as possible because, again, if you lose a particular device, you still have the way to get back into the website using your other device.
Well, that answers a question in a way. A listener that says, well, what happens if I do lose my phone and a bad guy gets it? They can't do anything, right?
No, because remember, even though the bad guy gets it, the passkey isn't just stored on your computer. It's stored on your computer or your phone and requires your physical sort of face ID or touch ID or fingerprint or something like that to be able to unlock. So even if somebody steals your phone and the passkey's on it, the passkey won't open unless that person has stolen your face as well.
Okay.
In other words, it's a Nick Cage and John Travolta movie all over again.
Yes.
So it's locked. So as long as somebody can't, unlock your phone, which they can't because they don't have your face.
But how does that fly in the face of what we've talked about before with people flying and don't use just face or touch identification because someone from ICE or something could say, okay, I'm going to hold this up to your face.
And use your phone to find out where you've been.
I'm confused.
It's a conundrum.
It's a conundrum, and we can certainly talk about how do people who don't want to use face ID or biometric ID set up pass keys in when we come back.
And let me just clarify so we don't leave people hanging. Listeners say, I like this idea. I'm all for it. You don't have to remember a string of letters or numbers or any wacky password you've put together if you go with pass keys.
Exactly. Basically, you just go. I mean, that's the reason why it's helpful for people with low vision is that you just try to log in and it says, oh,
it's you.
Just click this button here and it's you. I see that it's you because you've got your fingerprint that you log in, or I see face ID and okay, congratulations. Here you go.
Okay. In the last minute that we have here, a listener wants to know, what's to say that the bad guys, the bad actors out there, aren't already working on how to abuse passkeys?
Oh, I bet they are. They have to be.
Because it's a level of encryption that is just, unless something comes that we just don't know about, it requires a nation state level of computing to be able to hack a passkey. It's just that secure.
From your mouth to God's ears.
Speaking of hacking, we have about 30 seconds left and probably not enough time to do anything about this week in hacks. Anything major we should know about?
If you got something from Instagram saying that that you need to reset your password, that was somebody actually tricked Instagram into sending out the request, but it wasn't actually taking it offline. It's just someone being annoying and you know, that I forgot my password and it sends it to you. Somebody found a way to send that to millions of people. If you got one of those things, ignore it. Your password's fine.
But again, if you had pass keys, you wouldn't even have to worry about that.
Exactly.
Right? So we've come full circle. Thank you, Patrick, as always. Gosh, I'm excited. In 2 weeks, we're going to spend some more time talking about this for sure.
Fantastic. Talk to
Thanks.
You
then.
Thanks a lot, Patrick.
I know. It's a little late, but we had a shortened show tonight. So hopefully you all are still tuned in because we had 17 states check in tonight.
Let me start with some of the blog shout-outs. Mm-hmm. These are some of the countries that are checking out our blog, and we would like you to check out our blog and subscribe to it. Just go to steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. That's steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. And if you subscribe, there is no charge. We don't spam you. You just get an email anytime we do a new blog post. And some of the countries, we're constantly amazed at some of the countries who check in. United States, of course. And this week, Singapore, India, Ireland, Canada, Poland, Sweden, again, Hong Kong, SAR, China, Bangladesh, and Australia. And I also want to mention some of the people who posted tonight. I will be listening from Sandwich. Go Bears. I bet you will have great pictures. And that's Debbie Tusek. And I will be listening from Milwaukee on my Sea Crane portable radio using the Sea Crane pillow earphones. That's from Gene Jacobson.
Oh, hi, Gene. And let me start with well, some of the folks that texted, and you can text us throughout the show at 312-981-7200. Sherry Hanrahan in Romeoville checked in bright and early tonight. Charlie, I'm trying to read these, so bear with me. Eddie from Joliet, Go Bears. Bing Besh is in Winfield. Joyce is in Bloomingdale. JW and Dolly Mink are in Chesapeake, Virginia. Dean checks in from Indy, where it's in the low teens in Indianapolis. Janet is in Pittsburgh, and she remembers 40 years ago for the Super Bowl with the Bears getting a larger television to view. And I bet a larger television then was probably a 35-inch TV.
Yeah.
Because remember, we thought that was the coolest.
A big, heavy 35-inch tube TV.
Yes, yes. With an oak. Remember, ours was a floor model with a big, it was a big piece of furniture.
We still have it in
Well, no, that's one.
Oh, that's the other one.
We got rid of the monster, finally. Yeah. It was so big. Scott in South Dakota is listening online. Gary's listening from River Grove. George, I mentioned George earlier. He tunes in every Saturday night from Augusta, Georgia. Let me get to our folks who follow us on Facebook. Eric Baum is our regular listener from Wells Beach, Maine.
With a picture of a guy surfing.
A guy surfing because on Thursday they had temperatures in the high 40s in Maine. He said that's when the Mainers go surfing, while in Florida, when the temperatures get down to the 40s, people pull out their puff coats.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually been a lot colder than 40s in Florida. Jan Reinhardt is listening in the laboratory tonight. Carol Tyler Roberts tuned in. Go Bears. Judy B. is listening in Oak Lawn. Carrie Hunt is tuned in from Ruskin, Florida, where it's chilly. Diane Vasquez is in Merrillville. She's our graphics guru, and she did an adorable graphic for us of a little snowman all snuggled up in a coffee mug. Peter Jakubowicz and his fur baby Otto are tuned in tonight. Chuck Snitchler, our good friend who's now in Valpo. He's the best friend of this show and this radio station. Lynn Kinzer is in San Antonio, Florida, where it's a wee bit cold down here. Sharon Brask Malone is listening in K-Town. Brian Lefevre is in Bridgeport. Terry Brock is in Bridgeview. Susie Schimmel is in Glen Ellen. Andrea Barabitsky is tuned in. She said a little bit late. Well, Andrea, we're a little bit late, so thank you. Matt Palmer from Racine, Wisconsin. Karen Corcoran's in Berwyn. Mary Gold is in Tinley Park. Tracy Douglas is in Savannah, where it's a bit chilly tonight. Janet Gellert is in Gainesville, Florida. Carrie Johnson's in Palm Coast, Florida. Patricia Human is in Myrtle Beach Coast, and she is from PA. Donna Youngheim is in Oak Lawn. Helen Thomas is in Kenosha. Margot Moore in Albuquerque, listening from the beautiful high desert of Albuquerque. Robin Aiken is in Port Charlotte, Florida, listening via her cell phone. Debbie Hardiman says, what a doubleheader tonight. D.A. Dave and D.A. Dr. Crispin. Rob Mecklen is listening. Nancy Nosik is in South Holland. Nancy Witt is in Milwaukee. Beverly Goodall said she snuggled up in a cozy robe. I snuggled up with her radio tonight. Bonnie Pearson's in Grays Lake. Jim Smith is on the northwest side of Chicago. Roy Phillips. Greg Borgman is in blustery Muskegon, Michigan.
With a great picture. Oh, he says yes. It's a... whiteout conditions.
Yeah, they've
lake
had
effect snow
over and over again. Priscilla Gilbert Stake is in Joliet. Seal Bailey is tuned in. Michelle Fairfield, Catherine Bailey, Janice Kuratobi, Scott Cooper, and let me mention that Mike Kuchonian. And I always say, God bless you, when Mike checks in from Gahanna, Ohio. And if I missed you, I'll catch you next week because we have a full show next week.